This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Oh! Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is Sunday, April 21st, 2024. As we are just 2 weeks away from Backlash, it doesn't seem like it's that close, but things are starting to shape up. We know the main event of Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles that will take place in France. We also have a couple of other matches that are set. We have tag team title matches that are taking place. We have brand new tag team titles, the WWE and the World Tag Team titles. Both of those, I think, are very good choices. I like the new title belts themselves physically. And it makes sense, given the way that they've set up the men's and women's divisions with the world title and the WWE title, the women's world title and the WWE women's title. So this makes perfect sense. Now, a big week this week, as we saw Rhea Ripley having to relinquish her championship. And let me just address something right off the top here. There's been a rumor floating around from a couple of people I've spoken with. And the belief is that there's a chance that the Rhea Ripley relinquishment is a work. It's part of the story. And as I thought about it, it does, and it would swerve a lot of people, including myself, because I hadn't thought of it myself. Because it seems like it would not be in the nature of WWE to go through all this just to have Rhea Ripley troll. But it also, again, would swerve people big time. And it would shock people. And it would also send the message that this is not Vince McMahon's game anymore, and I can still get you when I want to get you. But outside of that, outside of just shocking people to shock people, I don't think there's any benefit in Rhea Ripley doing that as a character. Why? She relinquished the championship. She's no longer champion. For her to go through with this, she would have to, what, interrupt the main event of Backlash for the women to attack both of the competitors? You know, for what? Well, what did that prove? Also, you're kind of stopping the momentum of someone that has really caught fire the last several months, and you're doing this for what reason? And I don't know what that reason would be, again, outside of just WWE being able to tell the fans, I can still get you. You know, like that's not a very deep purpose. You know, so Rhea Ripley would have her title reign cut short just to have WWE say, ha, I got you. No, I don't think that's the best move, and I don't think it would benefit any of the stories she's got going on and the momentum she has going. Now, again, when she comes back, I think the fans are going to be on fire for her, even more so than they already are, because it's going to give a chance for people to miss her. There's that time that's on her side right now because, you know, she has really been able to pick up some momentum the last few months, and now she's going to go away at a very inopportune time. It doesn't even feel right that this would be a work. Just my gut says it doesn't make sense other than just, oh, okay, you guys got me. Now what? What's the larger purpose of this? So with all that said, I don't believe it's a work. If it is, okay, you got me, cool. But like, what's the, beyond the gotcha, what's the deeper meaning for this? You know, for Rhea Ripley to show her acting skills. So I just want to address that off the bat. Now, there's been other discussion, again, not really related to WWE, but more to this podcast. The fact that there's been emails I've missed in the mailbag. There have been voicemails. Here's what I think we're going to do with that. If there are emails and voicemails that I miss, we're going to give them to Anthony DeMarco, who does the After Dark show. Now, you can also, at the same time, send After Dark questions to me. I'll forward them on to him, and either I or he will answer those questions. Now, what's After Dark, if you're asking and you don't know? After Dark means it can be anything, okay? Anything. No topic is off limits. It's an adult version of the show. Most of you are adults listening, but you know what I mean, right? So don't let your kids listen to the After Dark show, you know, if you can help it. So that is the plan. That's the plan, to at least give everybody a chance to be heard. Now, as we move forward, it's just not going to be plausible for me to be able to get to every email and voicemail, even if I have help with it. It's just not, you know, as the show grows. And I know there were a lot of voicemails I didn't get to over the last couple of weeks, and with WrestleMania season and burnout, be honest, on my end with wrestling and with the podcast and just life and everything else. So I'm going to do my best, going to continue to do my best, but I want to let you know we may have a little bit of backup for the After Dark. So again, if it's something not wrestling related, and or it is, and it's just you want it answered on After Dark, put it in the subject of the email to mailbag@wwepodcast.com, After Dark question, something like that. You know, just so I know where to direct it. Again, I'll either answer it if I ever do it After Dark, or most likely Anthony DeMarco will. So wanted to put that out there. So I want to welcome a brand new patron, by the way, Warpath. That's the name. Cool name. Very, very cool name. Warpath, thank you so much for joining us here on the show, and hope you stick around with our content. I think you're going to enjoy everything going ad-free. All right. Well, let's get into this week as we are ready to roll and really get things moving in a big way for Backlash that takes place in, like I said, just a couple weeks. Really less than that. But big news, obviously, was Rhea Ripley, who relinquished her championship, said she's coming back for Blood. Some more stuff on SmackDown, and we'll get to Raw as well. But as y'all know, since you didn't hear my take on SmackDown, we'll start there and end with the quick notes of Raw, since I've already done a full review of it. And SmackDown starts out with AJ Styles and LA Knight. And they trash-talked each other to start the match. And it ended up being about an 11-minute match where AJ Styles ends up beating LA Knight in what I thought was a very solid match. This has been a great pairing for both men. AJ and LA Knight need one another right now. Seems like they may kind of split after this. AJ is going to challenge for the belt. LA Knight is unknown at this time. But if he lost here, it's to me clear that he's a maybe first round pick for Monday Night Raw. I think he should be a first round pick. Not maybe, I don't know about overall, but pretty close for Monday Night Raw. Going to Raw would be an LA Knight move here. And I think it's the right one, because we have LA Knight, who is floundering around a little bit on SmackDown ever since he lost to Roman Reigns. He's been kind of floating here, floating there, you know, still getting some decent pops, lost some momentum from, back in the fall. And now he's ready for Raw. You know, the fact that he lost tells you he's closing his story arc for SmackDown, moving to Raw. That starts next week. The draft starts next Friday and concludes the Monday Night Raw after. So there's going to be some big moves, obviously. Bloodline stories moving forward. We'll get to that in a minute, too. But LA Knight going to Raw is, to me, it's a perfect fit for both of the parties here. And I think that this is going to be a really good move for his career. But so anyway, the match itself with LA Knight and AJ Styles, I thought it was, again, very good. It did kind of save the face a little bit for AJ Styles or for LA Knight with the poke in the eye. Old school dirty trick, a little bit of Ric Flair there. So poke in the eye, phenomenal forearm, 1-2-3. So it was about as clean of a victory as AJ Styles is going to get these days. But you'll take it if you're an AJ Styles fan. And it really made sense. You can't have AJ Styles lose there with LA Knight taking on Cody Rhodes. WWE is not ready for that. And the fans would then have to choose. And I think a lot of them may boo LA Knight. I don't think that match with LA Knight versus Cody Rhodes would really help anyone. I mean, who would that help exactly? It would help LA Knight get exposure to the main event once again, but you know he's not going to win. There is a 0% chance. I don't care who's facing Cody Rhodes. It doesn't matter. Your first title defense after WrestleMania? You think they're really going to change directions after all of the struggle, all of the storytelling, the finish, the story, the tears, all that? They're going to just flop it to someone else. There is, I don't care who's facing Cody Rhodes. It could be Roman. It could be Austin. It could be Rock. It could be LA Knight. AJ Styles, doesn't matter. The idea of the Cody Rhodes match here is to look at the match as just quality match. You know, how good is it going to be? Which I think it's going to be excellent. And also, can they make me believe at any point in the match that AJ could win? That's the goal. The end result is not a chance. But is there a moment or two throughout the match that they kind of make you go, wait a sec. Whoa, 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 whoa. Right? Just for a moment. Can they do that? And I think they can. The talent that's in the ring is incredible. That's coming up for Backlash. So I expect nothing more than a phenomenal, no pun intended, match between these two that ends with Cody Rhodes as champion and retaining. Now, how long AJ Styles feuds with Cody, who's probably officially going to go to SmackDown in the draft, we don't know. I don't know. But I think AJ and Cody Rhodes could have a few month, maybe at least one more event program. I mean, AJ Styles is a world-class athlete, and I'm also ready for Cody Rhodes to stop talking and stop cutting promos every time he comes out and start actually, you know, getting into his opponents. And now, to be fair, you don't want to get into a program you can't deliver on, especially with the draft coming up. So I'm going to give everyone a pass with the fact that the draft is something you kind of have to wait for to get into any programs that are going to be of any significance. In other words, you don't want to start a program that you can't finish if the draft ends up splitting the two people you were trying to get to feud. So there is that. And I think next week, really, things get hot as we finally know who's where. And then Monday Night Raw, we conclude the whole event. So, but again, really good match. Let's move on as we get Nick Aldis unveiling the tag team championships. He introduced Triple H. I mean, I gotta say, like I love me some Trips. Okay, Papa Trips is obviously leading the pack here. He's the he's now our leader. And I understand that he is making a big deal out of WrestleMania. I'm ready to move on from anyone mentioning WrestleMania, especially Triple H. Yeah, you know, I get it. It was a very big event. I hope that this really finishes the whole WrestleMania dialogue. If I have to hear one more time that it's the greatest WrestleMania of all time, I mean, I may watch the rest of the show on mute. I know it's the, yeah, you guys say this every year, and guess what? You know what WrestleMania 41 is going to be? The greatest WrestleMania of all time. And WrestleMania 42, taking a wild guess here, just shot in the dark. WrestleMania 42 is also going to be the same thing. And then WrestleMania 43, I'm going to guess it's going to say the same thing. They have to say that. I don't know if they actually believe it. They might this year. Things are different this year with the no Vince McMahon. It does feel different. It is the dawning of a new era, big championship changes, all that. But again, biggest, greatest, subjective terms. They mean different things to different people. If you're measuring greatness on a scale, that scale of mine looks different than yours. And then even if our scales are identical, what are you using to measure that? Who's the greatest? What is the greatest? What makes something great? It gets extremely subjective. Great is just an overarching term for, we had a good show and we thought we made a lot of money. That's what that means. We had good ratings and we made a bunch of money. That's really what it boils down to for any for-profit organization. And they cover it with the biggest, the greatest, the most stupendous, you know, all these adjectives. It just means, hey, we made a lot of money that weekend. That's really what it is, which is fine. It's not a complaint. It's just the way it is. But I don't want to hear any more about it. Like, I'm kind of ready to move on. I'm ready to move on. If Triple H talks about WrestleMania 40 another time, I'm like, I may tweet at him. Yeah, that's a threat. But anyway, we got new tag team championships as expected. These are the WWE championships, as Monday Night Raw got the World Tag Team titles. WWE has the WWE Tag Team titles. Makes perfect sense to me. And they were handed to A-Town Down Under with Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. And Triple H offered them a handshake and they blew him off and shook each other's hands instead. I really like that. Aldis then, for the one of a couple times on Friday night, got in their face and threatened them and said if they disrespect Triple H like that again, he'd make them disappear permanently. I guess meaning fired or killed. I mean, I would imagine fired. I mean, he's not threatening to put them in the ground, I guess. But this was still a solid segment. I don't know how many more times I need to see Triple H, though, come out and introduce a new title or welcome us to a show and then disappear. I mean, Nick Aldis could have done just fine in that segment. I love Triple H, but it feels a little bit self-serving right now. Is he deserving of flowers? Yes, he is. But I feel like we've seen this song and dance for weeks now with Triple H coming out and essentially just soaking up the adulation of the crowd and throwing roses at his feet. So it just feels like that. So, all right. We then have Naomi backstage, and Naomi has a Naomi interview. And she says it's been over 2 years since she's last had a singles title match, and she would bring the same energy she did last week when she defeated Tiffany Stratton, and Legado del Fantasma finished their entrance. And okay, so we get a very Naomi short to the point promo, and she's never been, hey, it's not a knock on her. She's just never been known for great promos. I don't think that she has really that in her, and that's okay. It's a difficult thing to do. I'm not saying I could. She cuts probably a better promo than I could, but I just, viewing it for 30 years, I know how difficult it is because I've seen people struggle a lot and I've seen what good promos and bad promos are made of. I don't have to be in the business of actually trying to create one to know when a good one is in front of me. And Naomi just is, she's an okay promo. And I think really that's, to be honest, that's been a limiting factor for her. A limiting factor for Naomi is just the fact that she doesn't cut good promos and her character doesn't evolve a ton. She's got a fun little kind of rave feel to her entrance and her music's changed and, you know, we all feel the glow and she can do a split and all that and like, cool. Like you're fun to watch, but there's not a whole lot of substance it feels like there for me. And I think that's what's been her ceiling. It's just an emotional connection with the crowd. So, you hear that, Ricochet? Some of the women have the same problem as you. Anyway, we get AOP, Akam and Rezar, versus the Street Profits, Montez Ford and Angelo Dawkins, versus the New Catch Republic, versus Legado del Fantasma, in a number one contenders match, winner to face A-Town Down Under. Good match here. This match lasted, let me get the count here, just under 17 minutes. You kind of know what you're going to get here. I will say I really enjoy AOP, Akam and Rezar, and Paul Ellering, and that whole group. I continue to say it. I like their entrance. I like their look. I like their feel. But they never get to damn talk. How am I supposed to know who and what you are and why I should care and why I should dislike you if you can't talk? And also, more specifically, digging down further, Paul Ellering, if you're going to bring him in and not let him talk, you're just going to have him be this kind of statuesque figure. Why is he here? He hasn't said a word. I mean, almost, quite literally, he hasn't said a word. So what is he doing here? And also, he doesn't even physically inject himself into matches. So you can't even say, well, he doesn't talk, but he gets himself involved and helps this team win. No, he doesn't. He does nothing. And I'm saying that in frustration because I know he's capable of more and he's got a great look and he can talk. So why aren't we utilizing his skills to get this team over? Why even bother bringing him in? He's just a body. So I want more from him. Just not even more. Just something. The bar is pretty low here. But we also have New Catch Republic. Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne, also, again, they're suffering from kind of the similar issues here. They are very good in the ring. You know what kind of in-ring product you're going to get with them. But Mr. Joint Manipulation that I know a lot of you don't enjoy, and I think it's because you feel it's kind of a silly gimmick. I don't think it'd be so silly if he had more to his character other than, hey, I can bend your fingers. That's kind of the depth of his character is. Oh, I had a name change from Butch to Pete Dunne. I was Pete Dunne in NXT, and then Vince saw me as a rabid dog, so he called me Butch, and then I had an epiphany when Triple H came back, and now I'm Pete Dunne again. And by the way, I like to bend fingers in the ring. So what else do you know about you, Pete? Well, that's kind of it for now. So it's just really kind of a suffering of lack of character development. It's not that these guys can't go in the ring. There's just not much to them. Legado del Fantasma, probably the most character developed out of everyone in this match. Even, yes, more than the Street Profits, because we don't even know what the hell the Street Profits are from week to week. They don't even get to talk much anymore. But Angel and Umberto did get in here. But, I mean, out of the whole group, they're not exactly the most developed either. You know, it was kind of a group of underdeveloped but really good wrestlers getting in the ring and seeing who the fans are going to cheer for. And it ended up being the Street Profits. And I think they had a very good match. We get a really nice ending here. And Street Profits end up winning as A-Town Down Under's on commentary. The finish was Ford and Dawkins landing their Revelator finish on Angel and got the victory. And I think they do a very nice job. But I would like to hear more from everyone, really like everyone in this match. But now more specifically, the Street Profits, who now have a number one contenders match to face A-Town Down Under at Backlash. So, you know, and that's the other thing. I don't know if outside of maybe the women's tag titles, if there will be a single title changing hands at Backlash. And typically you'd say as Backlash, you know, you expect that. But they're going to be in France. And whenever you're overseas, the fans expect something special. And the fans will demand it. And usually they sometimes use those international platforms to make a big entrance, to do something big. But they kind of did all that a month ago at WrestleMania. And it's so my point is, I just wouldn't expect, if you're in France, if you're thinking about going to Backlash, I mean, I'm not discouraging you from it, because you guys never get them. You guys don't even get live events, much less a PLE. So I'm not discouraging you from going or thinking about going. If you want to go, go. I mean, like, even if you don't get the big title changes, you're still going to probably have a hell of an experience, and they may not come around again for a while. So I would encourage it, but I would also taper your expectations of, oh, wait, we're here. And I mean, what about a title change? I mean, who's changing titles here? It's certainly not Sami Zayn. Certainly not Cody Rhodes. Certainly not Bayley. Rhea Ripley's title will be the only one that is up for grabs, but that's only because she's injured. So you guys got lucky there. You'll see a new women's champion, a women's world champion. But simply only because of Liv Morgan, who is also becoming a very interesting character over on Raw, by the way. I've given Liv a lot of crap on this show because she feels just kind of a little bit too flirty, too fun, too outgoing, too at times a little over the top for me. And lately with this revenge tour she's been on and actually taking it seriously, it's been a lot more of an enjoyable character for me to watch than the happy-go-lucky in a schoolgirl outfit doing whatever she does to, you know, get attention. She gets attention by doing it this way. It's a much more real, authentic way to get the attention of fans. You know, and I know that you guys have heard me talk about this before with the women, and it seems like at times we're going the opposite direction of over-sexualizing the women, and sometimes the women do it of their own accord to get attention. But if that's the case, if this is truly a winning formula, if sexualizing yourself as a woman was a truly winning formula, then explain to me how someone like Bayley got to the top and was so successful. What made her so successful in NXT? Was it her physique? She's got a nice one, I'm not going to lie. So, I mean, I have eyeballs, I can see. But that's not what made the crowd react to her. You know, like, what made her so damn good was her in-ring ability, her character that just captured the minds of fans. And it felt so innocent. Remember the ponytails and the Bayley buddies and all that? Kind of that just shy girl that's trying to make it. And The fans reacted to it because it felt genuine. You know, even Sasha Banks, before she became extremely narcissistic and just insufferable. And I'm sorry, Mercedes Moné, and I know a lot of you love her, Sasha Banks, as we know her in WWE. She is a massive narcissist. And I don't mean that in a complimentary way. She did it even on the Steve Austin podcast, it's the Broken Skull Sessions, a couple of years ago. She was insufferable. It's like that's who she is. She has to be like, instead of the boss, she's the CEO, and she's got the same mannerisms that make me want to throw my phone across the room. And she's just not for me. That's all. Like I respect her in-ring ability. I respect her accomplishments. I know what she's accomplished. I understand what she's capable of in the ring. Her promos are probably the worst part about her, honestly. But anyway, I don't know how I got off that topic. My point is about all these women wrestlers who have succeeded in spite of or despite the fact that sometimes the men look at them as, wow, it's an attractive woman. Men that look at attractive women in wrestling don't look at them and go, oh, my God, I hope they become champion. That's not their goal, right? But looking at a woman like that and looking at a character and getting connected with them makes you want to cheer or boo. You know, it makes you want to see that woman succeed or not. If you're just attracted to them, you don't care if they win or lose. You're just there to look at them. So all the women's wrestling has really excelled in spite of the fact that they have not over-sexualized them and they took that away. And we have become a much more in-ring character-based development type of approach, which has succeeded. And that's why some of you who feel that I am somehow anti-woman just don't want to hear what I'm saying. You just want me to be like, oh, it's empowerment. It's not empowering, right? It's not empowering for men to gawk at you. How is that empowering to just shallow yourself to that? It's not empowering. You get attention, but again, what is the depth of that attention again? When you do that, you know exactly what you're doing. You know exactly what men are thinking. Explain to me how that's successful in your wrestling career. Explain to me how that's good for character development. Explain to me how that's good for emotional connection with your audience that is primarily male, by the way. Demographics still spell that out. So I want to see this is just my bottom line that I reiterate because some people just still don't get it and want to hear what they want to hear with me complaining about the women's wrestling. And it's not complaining about it. It's a concern I have. That with social media especially, and the women constantly, some of them, posting has something that has nothing and constantly posting things that have nothing to do with wrestling and everything to do with, look at my, you know, my titas, look at my, you know, backside. It's just, what does this do? Is it a confidence booster? Do you want the likes and the hearts that much? Do you need them that much? It's just, to me, it's not a good motivator if you're trying to get an actual successful wrestling career to reach its maximum potential. I'm not saying you can't reach it at all, but what would it have been if you didn't rely on that, which is superficial, surface level stuff, and actually focused on what fans connect with and have connected with since the dawn of pro wrestling, and that is interesting, deep characters that are relatable, good promos to great promos, great matches. That is at the heart of pro wrestling. You want likes, you want superficial likes, you want hearts, you want men to gawk at your body. There's a billion other places to do that to be successful in that field. Go to OnlyFans, right? Lacey Evans is making a killing. Go over there, right? But hey, women do what they want. I'm not telling women as a species what to do. I'm just telling you, since I'm a man and I understand, I would think how men work, and what makes women's wrestling really good is what makes the men's wrestling really good. That's it. It's the same psychology. It's the same elements that make men's wrestling great, that makes women's. But for some reason, the women feel like they somehow need to, some need to do these extracurricular things to get even additional attention. But while they get that attention, that very attention is going to deter them from reaching their maximum potential. Very short-sighted, I think, for some of the women. But do what you want. Yeah. Okay, I went off on that tangent, but I wanted to be very clear because I've gotten so many people, he's oppressing women. Stop. Yeah, I'm oppressing women by talking about them so much on this show. I have zero power to do anything in WWE. And I'm advocating for women to move forward and not backward by focusing on what has made them great, what made NXT great, what made Bayley great, Sasha great, even Charlotte to a large degree great, is great in-ring wrestling, quality promos, deep characters that people can relate to, period. Okay, let's move on. I think I made my point and belabored it a few times. So, all right. We have Paul Heyman, who is really struggling here with Solo Sikoa. Solo Sikoa, who continues to just take the reins, pun intended, I guess, of the bloodline and run with it. And he told Heyman last week that wins and losses have consequences. And we saw what happened last week with Jimmy getting brutalized by Solo and Tama Tonga being introduced. And Solo shows up in a suit. Really looks good in a suit. I really enjoyed that. Paul Heyman is betwixt and between, doesn't know what to do. He's loyal to Roman Reigns, but he's also loyal to the bloodline. Doesn't know what to do here. Tells Solo Sikoa he's not authorized. And Solo's ignoring it and looking for Kevin Owens. And Kevin Owens is not nowhere to be found. Solo Sikoa eventually makes his way out with Paul Heyman, who still looks a little bit kind of flustered, not knowing where his loyalties lie. And what do we hear? What do we hear for the first time? Guys, I'm not even kidding you. Like, actually, it's a question, really. Have we ever in Roman Reigns' heel run, in the last 4 years since he returned, what was it, August of 2020? So we're nearly at 4 years. Have we ever heard "We Want Roman" chants? Now, granted, there was a year, right, of no fans, 18 months, whatever it was, no fans, terrible. But have we ever heard a "We Want Roman" chant? Even when Roman was a babyface, the struggling big dog babyface, how often did we hear "We Want Roman" chants? It's been 2 weeks. 2 weeks. And the fans are already ready for Roman to come back and take out Solo. Take out Tama Tonga. See where Paul Heyman's loyalties lie. This is an interesting story. Now, I have said I'm ready for the bloodline to be over. The whole civil war, I'm done with it. And I am. But I'm done with the version that we saw. This is a new chapter that they've introduced that I'm on board for. Tama Tonga has been a really nice addition. Solo Sikoa stepping up in Roman's absence. It makes you wonder when Roman's returning, what he's going to do. Is someone else behind this like The Rock? And ultimately, here's my prediction, really early prediction. My thought is that we're not going to see Roman for a while. And when they do bring him back, he's going to be, I think he'll be advertised to come back. I really do. I think he'll be advertised to come back, maybe at a PLE. But if it is at a PLE, I'll just say bigger stage, bigger moment. So bigger things could happen. But if it's on a SmackDown, I could see it advertised. Roman Reigns return next week. My God, what is he going to do? How is he going to handle the Solo Sikoa situation? And I think that'll be a big number on SmackDown, because it's intriguing as hell to think about. You know, we're already getting the groundswell for Roman to return. Those chants already solidified him as a babyface. So I think this is already this. So like I said, Roman returns at some point. He's advertised to come back. And there's a confrontation between Solo and Roman. They go face to face. It seems like they make amends. It seems like Roman is not going to attack him and Solo's not going to attack Roman. And then, wham. Tama Tonga joins down in the beatdown. Maybe Jimmy Uso tries to make the save. He gets beat down too. Now we have a 2-on-2 bloodline civil war again with Tama Tonga and Solo Sikoa versus Jimmy Uso and Roman Reigns. that could happen at SummerSlam. They could build this out for another 3 months, 3.5 months, well, 3 months and change, till early August, till SummerSlam. And at that point, maybe we find out the Rock was behind the order, and that Solo Sikoa was actually getting his power and authority to run the Bloodline from the Rock. And Tama Tonga was brought in at the direction of the Rock. Jimmy Uso was brutalized at the direction of the Rock. Right? So now you have Rock, Solo, Tama Tonga on one end. You have Jimmy and Jey Uso on one end with Roman Reigns. I mean, you could even throw Cody Rhodes in there if you'd like, but so you could get a 3-on-3 down the line, or even at SummerSlam. It depends how quickly they want to push this storyline forward of The Rock and his team versus Roman and his team. How about that? And then eventually we get to, of course, the 1-on-1 with Roman Rock that we keep hearing about, almost happened this year until the fans willed it the other way. But that's my thought. This is going to be a fun story, and it already turned Jimmy Uso back to a babyface, which he belongs. Roman Reigns is now a babyface in the company, one of the biggest without even being back and only being gone for 2 weeks. So I think we have a lot of fun things setting up. I think The Rock is involved behind the scenes here, and Solo Sikoa has done a really nice job, and you know, having Kevin Owens in there is a nice in-betweener. I mean, Kevin Owens has been fighting with the Bloodline, it seems like, for 4 years, since they essentially were created, you know, since their birth. Kevin Owens has just been instinctively fighting the Bloodline, which is always a lot of fun, because he's a good foe for the Bloodline. The Stunner is fun. And having him bloodied by Tama Tonga backstage, fun. Effective. Now you're seeing how effective blood can be when it's used appropriately and sparingly. And I think that was a very effective segment. I think it probably was a blood capsule, but fine. It still was very effective. Kevin Owens trying to fight back, still getting beat down, the Samoan spike, all just a lot of fun. Tama Tonga already feels instantly like he belongs. He doesn't feel like he's a call up. He feels like he's just a mainstay and has been there forever. Yeah, he hasn't spoken a lot yet, but that'll come. Solo Sikoa has now been put in a prominent position. So I think they need time. WWE needs time for the fans to continue to want Roman to return, build that in their fans' minds, complete the total transformation to a babyface. Amazing, right? You're a babyface by just not being there. It's amazing, right? You haven't even said a word. Fans haven't seen you. You've gone MIA, and you're automatically a babyface. That the most famous to me happened back in, well, in my mind, 2002 for Triple H leaving one of the hottest heels. 7 months later, he comes back as the hottest babyface in the company in 2002 at Madison Square Garden in January. So it's kind of that same dynamic here. I don't think it's going to take 7 months. But Roman Reigns taking time away with Solo stepping up. Rock is pulling the strings behind the scenes that we don't know about yet. Tama Tonga automatically is just a perfect fit. Kevin Owens now being involved. This is all brilliant stuff so far. And it continues to be told, and it makes you want to see what's done next. When is Roman coming back, right? So I think you'll hear more "We Want Roman" chants, but I think it's going to be a while, because you need to establish Solo and Tama Tonga as a force to be reckoned with, running wild. There's no checks and balances. Who can stop them? That kind of thing. All right. Continue. Let's go to Santos Escobar versus Carlito in 7.5 minutes. This ended with Santos kicked the ropes into the groin of Carlito and then followed up with a Phantom Driver for the win. Escobar beats Carlito, which I think he needed after last week. Escobar lost. So a nice win for Escobar. I'm not sure exactly what Carlito's role is or how long his contract is for, but it seems like Carlito has been kind of a background player since his return. But I mean, just an observation. I don't really know. My instinct is to complain, but Carlito isn't the future of the company. He's just kind of an older but still very functional and useful nostalgic act. So there is some value in keeper Carlito there. He adds star power to that group. So, all right, let's continue. We get, Damage Control being interviewed in a luxury box. Dakota Kai was insulted that Io was referred to as a former champion. And she said Damage Control was still dominant and the Kabuki Warriors are still the tag team champions and that wouldn't change. And then wouldn't you know it, Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair joined them on the other side of the luxury box and stared them down. And Naomi made herself came out for the main event. Foreshadowing that Bianca and Jade are targeting the women's tag team championships. So eventually we all know we're going to get Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair. It's going to happen. But it seems like right now, based on even the limited work that Jade Cargill and WWE are reluctant to show us, that Jade Cargill is nowhere near ready for that kind of match. So if anybody's expecting Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair to have a meltdown or Bianca to turn heel or Jade to turn heel, it's going to be a while. Again, Jade has been clearly not paid by the hour here and been very much hit it and quit it, to turn a phrase, type of in-ring style. I mean, the last match she had, she literally did three moves. It seems like they just don't have her ready at the point where she needs to be to have a long-form match, i.e. 7 to 8 to 10 minutes, with somebody like a Bianca Belair. And it's not a knock on Jade. It's just a fact from what I'm seeing with my eyes. Okay, that's what I see. It doesn't seem like she's prepared from an in-ring psychology or in-ring perspective. Bad habits from AEW. Maybe she never really learned how to wrestle in the first place. Whatever the case may be, it just seems like she's not ready. So I don't expect anyone to turn anytime soon. But I will say this. Jade and Bianca will likely win and be a very dominant tag team, taking the titles away from Dakota Kai and Io Sky. From Asuka and Dakota Kai, or whatever combination they have there. And that's fine. Jade and Bianca will be tag team champions until they're ready to split them up and maybe face one another. But Bianca Belair has really been taking one for the team here, being a good soldier and not getting any mic time. And she's a good promo generally. And in ring, she's been kind of limited to only what Jade can do, right? I mean, like, she's been kind of following Jade around, helping Jade out, and being by her side. And they're a fun duo to look at. But it's almost like Bianca Belair is kind of been knocked down a couple of pegs to join Jade in the women's division of the tag team, with the tag team division, which is where they feel like Jade should be right now, is tag team wrestling. And it's a smart move. Why? For a couple reasons. Even though it's frustrating for Bianca Belair fans, hear me out. Bianca Belair is a big star. She may be the best women's athlete in the company. And you pair her with Jade Cargill, who's still, I mean, she's still an up-and-comer. She looks like $1 million, but she hasn't looked like $1 million per se in the ring. So you pair her up with star power like Bianca, instantly get her recognition, get her face time, but you're also splitting the workload in the ring, right? It's probably not even 50-50. It's probably like 80-20 or 90-10. Most of the workload goes on Bianca. So you're also getting her, you're getting Jade in-ring work, but it's limited and it's covered by the fact that you have Bianca to basically carry the entire team from a wrestling perspective. I mean, you know that the hot tag is going to be always to Jade. So she can come in and do some cleanup with a couple of clotheslines and hit her widow's peak or whatever she does. And you need more than that. So you're also, at the same time, allowing Jade to get an on-the-job training with Bianca, who is, again, one of the best athletes that they have in the company. So it's a good pairing, a great pairing, actually. It's frustrating because a lot of us thought she was going to burst onto the scene as a single star, and that hasn't happened. But there's really nobody better they can team her with. Bianca Belair is beloved. You know, so you don't have to worry about fans turning on Bianca and by proxy turning on Jade. Great in-ring or a great star power rub. And you get to split the workload and have Jade help out or Bianca help out Jade from an in-ring perspective and sit under the learning tree, so to speak. So it's a great pairing. And my last point, yeah, they're not going to split up anytime soon. All right. Let's see. We've then got the main event. Bayley versus Naomi for the WWE Women's Championship. This match went 10.5 minutes with a interference from Tiffany Stratton that ended the match. up until that point, I think it was a very solid match. Honestly, it may have been Naomi's best match since she's been back. Bayley and her worked very well together. They were very friendly throughout the match, but there were some heated moments. It ended again with Tiffany Stratton showing up and punching Bayley. That caused the DQ. And then we got a Bayley placing, or I'm sorry, we got a, what was it? A Tiffany, what is it? Probably prettiest moonsault. That's what it is. The prettiest moonsault onto both of the women. And that's kind of where things were left off. So, you know, when Tiffany Stratton is ending a SmackDown, no offense to Tiffany, that just means they are ready for the draft and there's not a lot of star power right now. Tiffany's not a big star yet. I don't think anyone would dispute that. I don't think Tiffany would dispute that. But, you know, it's still a fun SmackDown, but it ends with Tiffany Stratton. You know, it's a jarring change from like The Rock ending SmackDown just a few weeks ago, you know, leading into WrestleMania. It's just jarring. No disrespect to Tiffany, but no one's going to sit here and argue that she is a star right now. She's not. She's in the making. I think she's got a lot of potential. The fans are behind her, and she does have a beautiful moonsault. And she does feel like she belongs instantly. That's important when you come up from NXT. You don't want to feel like you're still in training when you come up. You want to feel like you instantly belong, like Kevin Owens did, like Tiffany Stratton did, and others. And I feel like Tiffany Stratton has got that. All right, quickly, over to the Monday Night Raw side of things as we'll wrap it up here after the Monday Night Raw notes as reminders as to what happened on Monday night. We got Chad Gable and Sami Zayn in an IC title match that, as you remember, was not only, of course, awesome from an in-ring perspective, and that may be underselling it. We got a Sami Zayn turn. Well, Chad Gable turning on Sami in front of Sami's wife, with Chad attacking Sami after Sami beats Chad. And now Gunther's coming back next week, reportedly. Well, tomorrow night on Raw, or tonight as you're listening to this, on Raw. So where does Gunther fit into the situation? You would imagine right back with Sami Zayn. He's probably not done with the IC title scenario yet, the title picture yet. He needs to have his rematch. And he also works excellent with both of those men. So you talk about a potential just classic triple threat at Backlash in France. That's, I think, what you're going to get here. I think you're going to get a triple threat for the IC title, as I think many of us thought was going to happen at WrestleMania, with Sami, Chad, and Gunther. And early spoiler, I mean, Sammy's not losing. So, really fun turn here, and we'll see if the fans buy into it. We'll see if the fans really buy into the Sami Zayn and Chad Gable dynamic from the perspective of totally turning on Chad, because he is a beloved character. But we'll see. So other big items here, Rhea Ripley obviously relinquished, which I talk about. Sheamus versus Ivar. Sheamus beats Ivar in 8 minutes and 20 seconds. Again, Sheamus returns, and what people are really talking about as I dissected on Raw is not really that he's back, but more about, oh my God, he's fat. How many times have you heard that over the last week? And Sheamus, again, we don't know. Maybe he physically was healed, but he didn't have time to get himself back into cardio shape. I mean, who knows? I just do know this. Here's what I do know. You know Vince McMahon would not have allowed this. You know Vince McMahon would have said, "Pal, you got to get yourself in shape before you come back on TV." That's exactly what he probably would have said. And for better or worse, fans have noticed that he put on a decent amount of weight. I mean, for his size, it was probably a good 30 pounds of body fat. Probably. But I honestly don't care. This is unfortunately what we're talking about instead of the fact that Sheamus is back. And oh, by the way, they played his old music when he won the match. So hopefully that continues. And it shows you that the fans do have an impact on what they do. Because the fans were the ones asking for Sheamus to get his old music back. And it seems like they might go there. Okay, we got more Triple H stuff and The Miz and Awesome Truth and Miz. We got R-Truth calling Triple H a magician and confusing him with Tommaso Ciampa, it's fun. But then we get a triple threat for the number one contender to the World Tag Team titles. And the winners of the match between DIY, New Day, and the Creed Brothers ended up being the team of DIY in about 11 minutes. So DIY wins the belts to face R-Truth and Miz. And this actually, if you're going to look at any title to change hands, the women's doesn't count because Rhea's out. The tag team titles, as I said, are probably the only ones that are the most severely impacted or the highest risk of changing hands if Jade and Bianca is made official versus Damage Control. This one's up there too. I mean, you have DIY out there who can wrestle their ass off, and you have a fun, loving team of The Miz and R-Truth. I still believe they'll probably retain, but there's a thought that, okay, you know, we have Ron Killings, R-Truth, out there. He's not young. He had his moment. Let's move on. There's possible, but I would give R-Truth probably like one more month, and then he's screwed. All right, Maxine Dupri and Ivy Nile versus Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell beat Maxine Dupri and Ivy Nile. We have Andrade versus Dominic Mysterio. Andrade beats Dom in 8 minutes and 40 seconds. We then have, Chelsea Green and Piper Niven beat Caden Carter and Katana Chance in 2 minutes. There's your 2-minute match for the women. It's frustrating. And we had a whole bunch of Jay stuff, which you can hear in my Raw review. And then we get the main event here of Sami Zayn and Chad Gable. Oh, I'm sorry. No, we got one more match between there. Jey Uso defeats Finn Balor in about 7 minutes. So there was that. We then had the main event, Sami Zayn and Chad Gable, as I mentioned, which was for the Intercontinental Championship, and it went 17 minutes, and Sami Zayn wins. And then Chad gets angry, finally snaps, and snapped on Sami Zayn in front of his wife. And I think that's really what solidified it for the announcers and for probably people at home, right? So, well, I think that'll do it for me, everybody, on this week in review, covering the Sunday, April 21st, 2024 edition of the show. If you want to go ad-free, patreon.com/WWE podcast is the place to go. You can also go to Patreon, or rather Apple Podcasts, and hit us up there. Both offer 7-day free trials. I know a lot of you take advantage of that, because the 7-day free trials are totally risk-free. If you listen to us and you think we suck, well, you can cancel. If you don't, you want to keep us going and keep the lights on and support us, you can do that as well and continue right after your trial ends. So that will wrap it up for me. Tomorrow I will be on the air with Anthony DeMarco. We missed last week because he was in Montreal for the Raw review. We'll reconnect tomorrow night, and then we'll be off and running here with the week before Backlash, and that'll do it for me. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWEPodcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.